Chapter 31, Death of Valentinian. The Sarmati, after this having made incursions into the Roman territories, the emperor marched against them with a numerous army. But when the barbarians understood the formidable nature of this expedition, they sent an embassy to him to sue for peace on certain conditions. As the ambassadors were introduced to the emperor's presence, and appeared to him to be not very dignified fellows, he inquired whether all the Sarmati were such as these. As they replied that the noblest personages of their whole nation had come to him, Valentinian became excessively enraged, and exclaimed with great vehemence, that the Roman Empire was indeed most wretched and devolving upon him at a time when a nation of such despicable barbarians, not content with being permitted to exist in safety within their own limits, dared to take up arms, invade the Roman territories, and break forth into open war. The violence of his manner and utterance of these words was so great that all his veins were opened by the effort, and all the arteries ruptured, and from the quantity of blood which thereupon gushed forth he died. This occurred at Magician Castle, after Gratian's third consulate won in conjunction with Equitius, on the 17th day of November, Valentinian having lived 54 years and reigned 13. Upon the decease of Valentinian, 6 days after his death, the army in Italy proclaimed his son Valentinian, then a young child, emperor, at Asincum, a city of Italy. Too, when this was announced to the other two emperors, they were displeased, not because the brother of the one and the nephew of the other had been declared emperor, but because the military presumed to proclaim him without consulting them, whom they themselves wished to have proclaimed. They both, however, ratified the transaction, and thus was Valentinian the younger seated on his father's throne. Now this Valentinian was born of Justina, whom Valentinian the elder married while Severa his former wife was alive, under the following circumstances. Justus, the father of Justina, who had been governor of Picenum under the reign of Constantius, had a dream in which he seemed to himself to bring forth the imperial purple out of his right side. When this dream had been told to many persons, it at length came to the knowledge of Constantius, who, conjecturing it to be a presage that a descendant of Justus would become emperor, caused him to be assassinated. Justina, being thus bereft of her father, still continued a virgin. Some time after she became known to Severa, wife of the emperor Valentinian, and had frequent intercourse with the empress, until their intimacy at length grew to such an extent that they were accustomed to bathe together. When Severa saw Justina in the bath, she was greatly struck with the beauty of the virgin, and spoke of her to the emperor, saying that the daughter of Justus was so lovely a creature, and possessed of such symmetry of form, that she herself, though a woman, was altogether charmed with her. The emperor, treasuring this description by his wife in his own mind, considered with himself how he could espouse Justina, without repudiating Severa, as she had borne him Gratian, whom he had created Augustus a little while before. He accordingly framed a law, and caused it to be published throughout all the cities, by which any man was permitted to have two lawful wives. 3. The law was promulgated and he married Justina, by whom he had Valentinian the younger, and 3 daughters, Justa, Grata, and Ga. The 2 former of these remained virgins, but Ca was afterwards married to the emperor Theodosius the Great, who had by her a daughter named Placidia. For that prince had Arcadians and Honorius by Flaxilla his former wife. We shall, however, enter into particulars respecting Theodosius and his sons in the proper place. 4. Chapter 32, The Emperor Valens, appeased by the oration of Themistius the philosopher, abates his persecution of the Christians. In the meanwhile Valens, making his residence at Antioch, was wholly undisturbed by foreign wars, for the barbarians on every side restrained themselves within their own boundaries. Nevertheless, he himself waged a most cruel war against those who maintained the Homoousian doctrine, inflicting on them more grievous punishments every day, until the philosopher Themistius by his appealing oration won somewhat moderated his severity. In this speech he tells the emperor that he ought not to be surprised at the difference of judgment on religious questions existing among Christians, inasmuch as the discrepancy was trifling when compared with the multitude of conflicting opinions current among the heathen. for these amount to above 300, that dissension indeed was an inevitable consequence of this disagreement, but that God would be the more glorified by a diversity of sentiment, and the greatness of His Majesty be more venerated, from the fact of its not being easy to have a knowledge of Him. The philosopher having said these and similar things, the emperor became milder, but did not completely give up his wrath, for although he ceased to put ecclesiastics to death, he continued to send them into exile, until this fury of his also was repressed by the following event. Chapter 33, The Goths, under the reign of Valens, embrace Christianity. The barbarians, dwelling beyond the Danube, called the Goths, one having engaged in a civil war among themselves, were divided into two parties, one of which was headed by Fritigerns, the other by Athanaric. When the latter had obtained an evident advantage over his rival, Fritigerns had recourse to the Romans, and implored their assistance against his adversary. This was reported to the emperor Valens, and he ordered the troops which were garrisoned in Thrace to assist those barbarians who had appealed to him against their more powerful countrymen, and by means of this subsidy they won a complete victory over Athanaric beyond the Danube, totally routing the enemy. This became the occasion for the conversion of many of the barbarians to the Christian religion. Two for Fritigerns, to express his sense of the obligation the emperor had conferred upon him, embraced the religion of his benefactor, and urged those who were under his authority to do the same. Therefore it is that so many of the Goths are even to the present time infected with the errors of Arianism, they having on the occasion preferred to become adherents to that heresy on the emperor's account. Ulfilas, their bishop at that time, invented the Gothic letters, 3, and translating the sacred scriptures into their own language, undertook to instruct these barbarians in the divine oracles. And as Ulfilas did not restrict his labors to the subjects of Fritigerns, but extended them to those who acknowledged the sway of Athanaric also, Athanaric, regarding this as a violation of the privileges of the religion of his ancestors, subjected those who professed Christianity to severe punishments, so that many of the Arian Goths of that period became martyrs. Arius indeed, failing in his attempts to refute the opinion of Sabius the Libyan, fell from the true faith, and asserted the Son of God to be a new god. For but the barbarians embracing Christianity with greater simplicity of mind despised the present life for the faith of Christ. With these remarks we shall close our notice of the Christianized Goths. Chapter 34, Admission of the Fugitive Goths into the Roman Territories, which caused the emperor's overthrow, and eventually the ruin of the Roman Empire. Not long after the barbarians had entered into a friendly alliance with one another, they were again vanquished by other barbarians, their neighbors, called the Huns, and being driven out of their own country, they fled into the territory of the Romans, offering to be subject to the emperor, and to execute whatever he should command them. When Valens was made acquainted with this, not having the least presentiment of the consequences, he ordered that the suppliants should be received with kindness, in this one instance alone showing himself compassionate. He therefore assigned them certain parts of Thrace for their habitation, deeming himself peculiarly fortunate in this matter, for he calculated that in future he should possess a ready and well-equipped army against all assailants, and hoped that the barbarians would be a more formidable guard to the frontiers of the empire even than the Romans themselves. For this reason he in the future neglected to recruit his army by Roman levies, and despising those veterans who had bravely straggled and subdued his enemies in former wars, he put a pecuniary value on the militia which the inhabitants of the provinces, village by village, had been accustomed to furnish, ordering the collectors of his tribute to demand 80 pieces of gold for every soldier, although he had never before lightened the public burdens. This change was the origin of many disasters to the Roman Empire subsequently. Chapter 35, Abatement of Persecution against the Christians because of the war with the Goths. The barbarians having been put into possession of Thrace, and securely enjoying that Roman province, were unable to bear their good fortune with moderation, but committing hostile aggressions upon their benefactors, devastated all Thrace and the adjacent countries. When these proceedings came to the knowledge of Valens, he desisted from sending the adherents of the Homoousian into banishment, and in great alarm left Antioch, and came to Constantinople, where also the persecution of the Orthodox Christians was for the same reason come to an end. At the same time Ousoas, bishop of the Arians at Antioch, departed this life, in the fifth consulate one of Valens, and the first of Valentinian the Younger, and Dorotheus was appointed in his place. Chapter 36. The Saracens, under Mavia their queen, embrace Christianity, and Moses, a pious monk, is consecrated their bishop. No sooner had the emperor departed from Antioch, than the Saracens, one who had before been in alliance with the Romans, revolted from them, being led by Maria their queen, whose husband was then dead. All the regions of the east therefore were at that time ravaged by the Saracens, but a certain divine providence repressed their fury in the manner I am about to describe. A person named Moses, a Saracen by birth, who led a monastic life in the desert, became exceedingly eminent for his piety, faith, and miracles. Maria the Queen of the Saracens was therefore desirous that this person should be constituted bishop over her nation, and promised on the condition to terminate the war. The Roman generals, considering that a peace founded on such terms would be extremely advantageous, gave immediate directions for its ratification. Moses was accordingly seized, and brought from the desert to Alexandria, in order that he might there be invested with the bishopric, but on his presentation for that purpose to Lucius, who at that time presided over the churches in that city, he refused to be ordained by him, protesting against it in these words, "I account myself indeed unworthy of the sacred office, but if the exigencies of the state require my bearing it, it shall not be by Lucius laying his hand on me, for it has been filled with blood." When Lucius told him that it was his duty to learn from him the principles of religion, and not to utter reproachful language, Moses replied, "Matters of faith are not now in question, but your infamous practices against the brethren sufficiently prove that your doctrines are not Christian. For a Christian is no striker, reviles not, does not fight. For it becomes not a servant of the Lord to fight. 2. But your deeds cry out against you by those who have been sent into exile, who have been exposed to the wild beasts, and who had been delivered up to the flames. Those things which our own eyes have beheld are far more convincing than what we receive from the report of another." As Moses expressed these and other similar sentiments, his friends took him to the mountains, that he might receive ordination from those bishops who lived in exile there. Moses having thus been consecrated, the Saracen war was terminated, and so scrupulously did Maria observe the peace thus entered into with the Romans that she gave her daughter in marriage to Victor, the commander-in-chief of the Roman army. Such were the transactions in relation to the Saracens. Chapter 37. After the departure of Valens from Antioch, the Alexandrians expel Lucius, and restore Peter, who had come with letters from Damasus, bishop of Rome. About the same time, as soon as the emperor Valens left Antioch, all those who had anywhere been suffering persecution began again to take courage, and especially those of Alexandria. Peter returned to that city from Rome, with letters from Damasus the Roman bishop, in which he confirmed the Homoousian faith, and sanctioned Peter's ordination. The people therefore, resuming confidence, expelled Lucius, who immediately embarked for Constantinople, but Peter survived his re-establishment a very short time, and at his death appointed his brother Timothy to succeed him. Chapter 38. The Emperor Valens is ridiculed by the people on account of the Goths, undertakes an expedition against them and is slain in an engagement near Adrianople. The Emperor Valens arrived at Constantinople on the 30th of May, in the sixth year of his own consulate, one and the second of Valentinian the Younger, and found the people in a very dejected state of mind, for the barbarians, who had already desolated Thrace, were now laying waste the very suburbs of Constantinople, there being no adequate force at hand to resist them. But when they undertook to make near approaches, even to the walls of the city, the people became exceedingly troubled, and began to murmur against the emperor, accusing him of having brought on the enemy thither, and then indolently prolonging the struggle there, instead of at once marching out against the barbarians. Moreover, at the exhibition of the sports of the Hippodrome, all with one voice clamored against the emperor's negligence of the public affairs, crying out with great earnestness, "Give us arms, and we ourselves will fight." The emperor, provoked at these seditious clamors, marched out of the city, on the 11th of June, threatening that if he returned, he would punish the citizens not only for their insolent reproaches, but for having previously favored the pretensions of the usurper Procopius, declaring also that he would utterly demolish their city, and cause the plough to pass over its ruins. He advanced against the barbarians, whom he routed with great slaughter, and pursued as far as Adrianople, a city of Thrace, situated on the frontiers of Macedonia. Having at that place again engaged the enemy, who had by this time rallied, he lost his life on the 9th of August, under the consulate just mentioned, and in the fourth year of the 289th Olympiad. Some have asserted that he was burnt to death in a village whither he had retired, which the barbarians assaulted and set on fire. But others affirm that having put off his imperial robe, he ran into the midst of the main body of infantry, and that when the cavalry revolted and refused to engage, the infantry were surrounded by the barbarians, and completely destroyed in a body. Among these it is said the emperor fell, but could not be distinguished, in consequence of his not having on his imperial habit. He died in the 50th year of his age, having reigned in conjunction with his brother 13 years, and 3 years after the death of the brother. This book therefore contains the course of events during the space of 16 years. Dash.